got a doozy of a show for you guys tonight. Young Turks, host Jake Huger, that's me. We got an excellent TYT Investigate story for you guys. And then the Democratic Party back to its old dirty tricks. Great slash terrible story on that, about how they are trying to block progressives from winning races against their incumbents. Is blood boiling story, unfortunately. And then a couple of cases of unfortunately new sexual harassment, including Poppy, George H.W. Bush, with as he would, this is George W. Bush's dad, who of course was president before him. As he would grab women's asses, what would he tell them? It's unfortunately slightly funny. Okay, so hold for that, hold for that. That's in the second hour. And it obviously very wrong, don't get me wrong, okay? So don't miss a minute of the show. You guys know you want to watch the whole show ad free. TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, let's start with fun. President Trump was talking to Lou Dobbs. It was a really gross interview of just basically ass kissing back and forth. But that's not the best part of the interview. I'm going to show you the best part. It is when Donald Trump started talking about the Chinese president Xi Jinping. Okay, buckle up, because there's no way he's not going to say something stupid, and boy does he deliver. Let's watch.
He's a powerful man. I happen to think he's a very good person. Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, he represents China. I represent the USA. So, you know, there's going to always be conflict. But we have a very good relationship. People say we have the best relationship of any president, because he's called president also. Now, some people might call him the king of China, but he's called president.
No one calls him the king of China. No one. That's not a thing that exists. Some people might call him the king of China, but he's actually a president. Did you know that? Yes, the rest of us already knew that. Can you tell what's actually happening here? He thought that the Chinese leader was a king. Oh God, he's just so stupid. But the funny part about it is how proud he is that he figured out before he went on television, what, 9 months into his presidency, that the leader of China is actually not a king, but a president. And he's like bragging about it, like, did you know that he's called president? Did you know that? Yes, we knew that. And the president of the United States of America should also know that, or US of A, okay? And who says things like, people say we have the best relationship of any president? What does that mean? What do you? First of all, everything has to be the best. Remember in Puerto Rico, we had these big, beautiful, soft towels. Puerto Rico is surrounded by water, big water, ocean water. We have the best relationship of president. Oh my God, he's an absolute imbecile. And he's, you know, he's a very good person. Look, George W. Bush got justifiably mocked for saying that he looked into Putin's soul and thought that he was a good person. And Bush gave Putin the nickname, and every time I have to preface it with, I'm not kidding, of Pooty Poot. So, I mean, we have a poll up on who's dumber, Trump or Bush. Don't forget, Bush was pretty bad, okay? But this is a whole nother level, you know? This was Bush back then. You know, they don't even call him king. And now we got Trump going, some people think he's a king. But no, it turns out it's president. Among Republicans, he's still polling at an astronomical rate. They look at that and go, he's a dummy just like me. That's my boy. Jesus Christ, God help us all. Okay, we're moving forward. Exciting news for CBS. They have named a new CBS Evening News anchor. Oh, wait, what happened? I thought you guys were gonna go nuts. Does anyone care? All right, well, that's the point of this story. First of all, does anyone know who the new anchor is? The anchor of CBS Evening News. This used to be legendary. Walter Cronkite had this position. Dan Rather had this position. This was the most important position in news, arguably, back in the day. Of course, no one knows. Okay, let's just keep it real. All right, that's fine. I'll give you a guess. There it is. Yeah, I'm going to give you help. There he is. So now you got it, right? You still don't have it? You don't know who that guy is? You're right. No one on planet Earth knows who that guy is, including his mom. That is apparently Jeff Glor. Huh. You know him now? Nope, you still don't know. There's not a single person in the audience who raised their hands when I asked who that guy is. Do you know him or not? Okay, now, okay, I'm sorry that I'm amused by this story. Anyway, he's obviously replacing the old CBS Evening News anchor who was there for 6 years. Now, this guy you know, right? I mean, he was also on 60 Minutes and just all over CBS. Anybody want to try a stab at his name? Anybody? Anybody? Yeah, now look, some of you do know him. Some of you do know him. This is Scott Pelley, okay? And you know, I certainly know who Scott is, and some folks do, but probably not a lot. I know that because I go give speeches on colleges and to other young folks. Whenever I ask, can anyone name the CBS Evening News anchor, the ABC News, NBC News, no one has ever named the CBS or ABC News anchors. A couple people guessed Brian Williams for NBC. Okay, which is not true, that's the old one. And yes, in a graduate level class at USC, a couple people knew Lester Holt. Anyway, I forgot to tell you, there was a transitional anchor between Scott Pelley and Jeff Glor. But what am I thinking? I didn't have to tell you. You guys know who it was, right? You've been watching him the last 6 months. He's been at the CBS Evening News for 6 months. You don't know him either? Okay, here he is. It's actually Anthony Mason. Looks a little different since he retired from the Knicks. that's not right. Anyway, all right. Yeah, that's rest in peace. Not this Anthony Mason, the other Anthony Mason. Okay, this guy's career is that. No, I'm kidding. His career is fine. He's still going to continue at CBS. Okay. So now, look, the fact that you don't know him is both good. Like, it's clearly not great news for CBS or any of the evening news stations or television overall, and certainly broadcast news. But it could be potentially a good thing. Like, maybe they picked the guy out of nowhere because he's really great. And who cares that we haven't heard of him? That's better than picking some stupid star. Like, oh my God, they star name recognition. We are bringing back, you know, we're putting in here Ryan Seacrest. And, you know, Ryan's a hardworking dude. But, okay. So, look, maybe that it's a no name's a good thing, right? So, we actually looked into it a little bit, looked at an Associated Press story that had some quotes from CBS executives, etc., to see why they selected him. And to be fair, I think he's won an Emmy, but I know guys who've won half a dozen. I know one guy, I think, has won over a dozen Emmys in local news, so I don't think that's really was the decisive factor here. So let me give you quotes from the Associated Press. They said, ABC's World News Tonight has ascended to the top of the ratings after the telegenic David Muir replaced Diane Sawyer. Oh, so ABC's number one, and they have David Muir, who's a good-looking young guy. So, of course, what do television executives think? Oh, I got it. We got a young guy who is also telegenic. That's the answer. I'm sure that it'll turn things around right away. And then they explained, with the 42-year-old Glor taking over sometime before the end of the year, CBS will have a youthful anchor to match ABC's Muir, who is 43. Oh, okay, another good relevant factor here. Okay, telegenic and young. He's really close to David Muir. I got news for you guys. I know David Muir is at the top now, and he does 2 million more viewers than the CBS thing. And in their world, that's super important. No one under the age of 35 has ever heard of David Muir. Okay, so now that's okay, bless his heart, but it's just like, this is gone. These folks still think it's relevant. Like, they're all like, oh wow, Glor got the job, huh? Is he going to be able to compete with Muir? This is a real nail biter. Nobody's biting their nails. No one. Okay. By the way, there's a little bit, I'm going to show you the numbers here, there's a twist to that, which is really interesting. So we're going to get there in 1 second. I just want to quote CBS News President David Rose as well, have him explain. He says, it doesn't hurt the broadcast prospects that Jeff is of his generation. And I think Jeff naturally communicates a digital future for the broadcast. If you say so. Okay, here we are in digital world. Has anyone ever heard of Jeff Glor? Now, look, and by the way, I just want to be super clear. Jeff's probably a good guy. I don't know him at all. And I'm obviously being a little bit of a jerk here. Let's just keep it real, okay? Keep it 100. And by the way, he might also be a bad guy. I've never met him. I don't know. But likely he's a good guy, cares about the news, super happy to get this job, bless his heart. And he did work on the digital side of CBS apparently. But my point in doing this kind of jerky segment is, like, the world has completely and utterly changed, and they're doing almost nothing to catch up. This is rearranging the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. Like, oh, let's get a young chair. Oh, that chair looks so shiny. Okay, I hear the kids are into that chair. I mean, he's in the digital age group. Yeah, but did he, like, and I don't mean this, I don't care. I wouldn't want to take the CBS Evening News job if you paid me, and they would, and I would still say no a billion times over. It is a super uninteresting job of reading from a prompter that someone else wrote. Again, my bad, I'm being a jerk, but that, look, they read the news, they're readers, not an interesting job. But if you want it, so that's all a prelude to, if you really want someone from the digital generation, why don't you pick someone who grew up on the internet? I know it's laughable, they would never do that. Here, look, I'll pick someone who is also on the internet, and from time to time we compete for awards and stuff like that, Phil DeFranco. Now that would have been a bold choice. I would have been like, whoa, that is digital generation. They're not playing, they're gonna go in a completely different direction. No, this is just riding out the rest of this journey. You know where the journey ends, off a cliff. And they're just like, oh, all right, let's just ride and see how it goes, okay? So that's just the reality of it. I mean, look, again, Jeff's probably a good guy, but no one on the internet has ever heard of him. Okay, so last thing is, this is the twist. CBS Evening News, you know how many people watch them? I kid around and I say nobody. That's actually not true. 6 million viewers a night. Wow. You know how many people watch CNN? Primetime audience, not overall, primetime audience, 1.59 million. Actually, Jeff Glor will more than triple the Anderson Coopers of the world. And similar numbers for Fox News and MSNBC. So actually, three times more people will watch him than Rachel Maddow, Sean Hannity, all those folks. So it's really interesting the way the media business works. Now the reality is that 6 million is enormously old. They're in their 60s, now bordering 70s. Okay, no offense, I love you guys, but that's just the reality, okay? But you know what? Cable news audience is also ancient. CNN's average age on television is 61, MSNBC is 64, Fox News is 68. It's amazing what people pay attention to. Because the cable news guys are in every other news station, they're in the pizza shops, they're in some of the bars that you go to, God help us. They're in congressional offices. So everybody's talking about, oh my God, Anderson Cooper said this, Rachel said that, Sean said this. In reality, not that many people watch them either. So whether it's this show or other shows on the internet, we get way more than either one of those guys. But since it's not in the Washington and New York circles, and it's not on a loop 24/7, they, by the way, and again, to be super fair, the folks in power will turn around and go, for example, the example I use, Phil DeFranco, and I'm trying to give him credit here. I think that he's got a huge audience. He would do, like, if you actually wanted to appeal to young people, that would be an interesting way to go, right? So they would go, Phil DeFranco, nobody's ever heard of Phil DeFranco. Everybody knows Jeff Glor, nobody knows DeFranco. It kind of depends on who you're asking, right? So if you want an older audience, you go with the guys like Glor. You're not gonna get a 42-year-old audience. You're not. I write it down in stone. No one under the age of 45 is gonna watch CBS Evening News or ABC or NBC. They're never going to turn around. They're gonna stay in the same exact way until one day they wake up and it isn't 6 million, it's six people, right? But the different circles that news travels in is fascinating. And So the overall takeaway, funny enough, is not about Jeff Glor or CBS, even though I had fun with that part of the story. It's actually that we give cable news way too much attention. They don't deserve it. Their audience is actually smaller than the guys you've never ever heard of. And they're the same age. They're not any younger at all. So the relevance of cable news is greatly magnified of simply because of where it airs. So keep it real on who has the audience, what those demographics are, and who the future is. And the future, unfortunately for them, ain't on TV. Okay. I kind of feel weirdly guilty about that story that I made too much fun of them. Because I just don't know the guy at all, and he's gonna look at it and go, "This guy's such a dick."
That's what I'm saying. I was gonna say, yeah. Mean guy talking trash. So you're in the TV business. How do you can't leave it? So what's your answer? Obviously, bringing in someone like, not saying you'd bring in. I can't remember his name now anyway because I don't follow
DeFranco?
I don't follow these youngsters. Yeah, the DeFranco guys, but like nobody's gonna start watching nightly news because DeFranco's
on. No, you can't bring in DeFranco for nightly news because it's the 68-year-old audience mm-hmm. there would be like, "Who is this whippersnapper? Mm-hmm. This is crazy." But you should, like, CBS has a whole internet arm that theoretically is doing okay, right? But they can't help themselves. That internet arm is also filled with the Jeff Glores of the world. That's where you should begin to build stars, but actual internet stars. But that rubs them the wrong way. They look at those internet stars and go, "No way, no way. They do not wear ties. They are not buttoned up, and they won't read from the fucking prompter." Right? So that's the real heart of the problem: lack of authenticity. Okay. Anyways, let's move forward. All right. This is a sad story. Okay. Now, Mark Halperin is a guy that I have honestly some disdain for, to say the least. Go back and watch some old clips. He is, to me, the epitome of conventional wisdom and the establishment media. Some conservatives might think, "Oh, it's a media figure on TV, he must be liberal." It dawned on me a couple of years ago, he's so frustrated. There's no person on television that reinforces right-wing Republican talking points more than Mark Halperin. And it dawned on me a couple of years ago that I was like, "Oh, maybe he's just a Republican." there's that possibility. So whatever he is, and I don't know, and I don't really care. He will tell you that war is great, and then we need tax cuts for the rich, and then any progressive idea has no chance of ever being accomplished. It's conventional wisdom 101, and it's almost not his fault. He's just the creation of Washington, and so that's the situation that Mark Halperin was in, and that's why I had no love for Mark Halperin. But today's news about Mark Halperin is sadder. It is about, unfortunately, sexual harassment charges. So let me tell you what those are so that you could see what's going on. And it has cost him a job already. So CNN broke this story, and hey, you know, sometimes I get on CNN for not breaking stories, but they did break this one, so credit to them. Veteran journalist Mark Halperin sexually harassed women while he was in a powerful position at ABC News, according to five women who shared their previously undisclosed accounts with CNN and others who did not experience the alleged harassment personally, but were aware of it. So that corroboration is important, and I'm going to have a quote on that for you in a little bit as well. So five women, that's a lot. So this story could have complications, and I will get to that as we keep telling you more about it, but at the end, it does not end well. The stories of harassment shared with CNN range in nature from propositioning employees for sex to kissing and grabbing one's breasts against her will. Three of the women who spoke to CNN described Halperin as, without consent, pressing an erection against their bodies while he was clothed. That's terrible. Now, he denies that part of the charge, but admits that he did do something. I'll get to his quote in a second. But to be clear, Oliver Darcy for CNN reports, Halperin denies grabbing a woman's breasts and pressing his genitals against the three women. In fact, here is Halperin's statement. He said, the women who worked with Halperin, who spoke with CNN, did not report to Halperin. Hold on, sorry. Oh, sorry, one more thing before I get to Halperin's statement. CNN also reports the women who worked with Halperin and who spoke with CNN did not report to Halperin. However, Halperin made many decisions about political coverage at ABC News and had a voice in some critical personnel decisions. None of the women have said, though, that he ever promised anything in exchange for sex or suggested that he would retaliate against anyone. So I read that and I thought, look, he's denying the non-consensual stuff. Well, this and asking people out, that's a more of a gray area that I'll get to in a second. And he did not necessarily hold power over them. So that makes it different than Harvey Weinstein or Roger Ailes or Bill O'Reilly. So let's withhold judgment for a second. And I'm thinking this as I'm reading through the story. And then we get to Mark Halperin's statement. During this period, he said, I did pursue a relationship with women that I worked with, including some junior to me. I now understand from these accounts that my behavior was inappropriate and caused others pain. For that, I am deeply sorry and I apologize. Under the circumstances, I'm going to take a step back from my day-to-day work while I properly deal with this situation. Now, you guys might not know this, but because of the nature of me running the company, I've had all these seminars, right? And so they explain, and I was actually surprised by this, I got this about a year ago, you now cannot criticize employees for dating each other. So the rules have changed a little bit and it depends on which state you are, etc. Don't take your counsel from me. But so there, as I'm reading the story, I said, okay, now let's really withhold judgment here. It depends on the context of his relationship with those folks. If he asked someone out and they said yes, that actually would be perfectly acceptable. And I'm trying really hard not to hold my bias against them on policy issues, etc. Away from the story so that I don't prejudge it, right? So now, and by the way, if you ask someone out and they say no and you leave it at that, that's also okay. Now, it's a little uncomfortable, so you have to be really careful at work, and I don't really suggest it. I definitely don't suggest it, but it does happen from time to time. And just whether the punishment of the person should not depend on whether the woman involved said yes or no to their simple request for a date. So if that's what this was, well, he could certainly recover from that, I think. But then I read more and realized it doesn't look like that's what this was. So from another piece of reporting here, away from the CNN story, after the CNN story broke, Clarissa Ward, another reporter that worked at ABC, tweeted, quote, this was an open secret when I was at ABC for years. Brave of these women to speak up. Uh-oh. So it looks like it wasn't just simply asking people out innocently. Then you read the details, going back to the CNN story, and the details are not good. So the first woman told CNN that she was invited to visit his office in the early 2000s when he was a political director at ABC News to have a soda, and said that while she was there with him, he forcibly kissed her and pressed his genitals against her body. No. That if true, that is completely and utterly unacceptable. I mean, there's three different parts of that that are unacceptable. First of all, don't invite, if you are someone who has a higher position at the company, don't invite someone else who thinks, well, maybe he could help me down the road. Don't invite him for a soda, and you guys have not had any other interaction, there's been nothing else, and all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to force yourself on her. That's terrible, terrible. And then kissing her without her permission. What are you, nuts? And at work, and she works under you in the chain at ABC, let alone once you get to the genitals against the body. Okay, here's the quote from the unnamed woman. I went up to have a soda and talk, and he just kissed me and grabbed my boobs. I just froze, I didn't know what to do. Who does that? Who does that? Apparently, unfortunately, a lot of people and a lot of men in power. I'm blown away by it. I can't imagine, like, oh, hey, how you doing? And then boom, you grab their breast. That's insane. That's insane. But apparently, it was done with great frequency, some version of that, as we're seeing with all these stories. Okay. CNN continues, when she did make her way out of his office, the woman told a friend at ABC News what had happened. The friend told CNN she remembered the woman telling her about the incident and seeing her visibly shaken. So throughout the CNN article, I'm actually not giving you all the details because I don't want to you know, beat it into the ground, and it just gets gross after a while. But there is several corroborating witnesses, so it's not just Halperin's word against one person or even against five people. There are also people at the time who said, yeah, I saw her come out of the office and she was shaking and she told me what happened at the time, not now. Okay, just last couple of quotes here so you get the full context. The unnamed woman also said the first meeting, and this is another person, the first meeting I ever had with him was in his office, and he just came up from behind. I was sitting in a chair from across his desk, and he came up behind me, and while he was clothed, he pressed his body on mine, his penis on my shoulder. I was obviously completely shocked. I can't even remember how I got out of there, but I got out of there and was freaked out by that whole experience. Given I was so young and new, I wasn't sure if that was the sort of thing that was expected of you if you wanted something from a male figure in news. That actually was the most devastating quote to me, not because of the weird penis to shoulder thing, which I've never heard of before, but because of how it made her feel. The abuse of power where, you know, I'm not going to try to court this person, I'm not going to try to get their consent, I'm going to use my power. And the younger they are, the more they don't know the ropes. And then how many women, whether it's through Halperin or other people, thought, is this the rules of the game? I don't want to play this game. So in order to work and in order to advance, do I have to do something gross with a guy? Well, I'm not going to do that. And how many of them we don't know about that then stopped doing that job? Or didn't go up the ladder. I mean, this is devastating for women on a macro scale. And we had no idea, or at least I didn't, and a lot of us didn't, the magnitude of the problem that we are now seeing being uncovered in front of our eyes. Now, MSNBC, where he was a regular on-air contributor, mainly on Morning Joe, said Mark Halperin is leaving his role as a contributor until the questions around his past conduct are fully understood. So that leaves us some opening that he could come back. Now, he's a guy that is beloved by the mainstream media and the establishment. He had a book about the campaign's game change that was turned into an HBO show. He had a show on Showtime. He was at ABC. Everybody read The Note, which is the morning edition of the news that he put out. And that's why he was so influential. He made and broke careers in a lot of ways, whether you got featured in The Note or you didn't. He went on to work in many different parts of the media. He got a $1 million contract reportedly from Bloomberg. So all these different news organizations, if Mark Halperin walked in, they were like, yes, Mr. Conventional Wisdom, we love it. Super respected, not necessarily by us and the internet and progressives and young people, but the establishment loved this guy. So my guess is they're going to give him every opportunity to rehabilitate himself, and he will go through all the different rigmarole that they do. And if anyone has a chance at a comeback, given how much those folks on TV like Halperin, probably Halperin has the best chance of a comeback. But the details are deeply disturbing, and I'm not sure that they merit that. Being a progressive, I never want to rule out second chances for people, but the recognition that, you know, those women thought their career might have been in jeopardy, and the non-consensual part of this, the fact that recognition has to be so thorough and so convincing, because how can you make sure that he goes back and works with other women and is not going to do the same things? And it's not a thing against Mark Halperin, and I withhold all judgment on whether he can rehabilitate himself like that. But we see with the Ailes and the Weinsteins and the O'Reillys, it is usually behavior that is repeated over and over and over again. But last piece of, just to be fair to Halperin, this was in the 1990s. It doesn't make it any better at all. It's just that there is no reported similar behavior in the last decade or so. There's some in the mid 90s, late 90s, I think early 2000s, but not anything for the last 10 years. So unlike those other characters, he might not have repeated it. I am trying to be over the top fair to him, and I'm not quite sure why, but these details are really, really bad. But the most important part of all of this is, I think that we're all learning how much women have suffered in the workplace, unfortunately quietly so in most of the instances. And I think the spotlight on this, putting aside people like Halpern and the rest, for women overall as a society, I think it is a great tipping point where we put a spotlight in and begin to turn the corner and hopefully not have this happen at the scale that it was happening before. Hopefully we wipe it out completely, but that'll obviously take some time. But for all the guys out there who are thinking of abusing their power, or in some rare cases women that might do likewise, well, you better be careful because you might be next in terms of the spotlight. So that's a great thing because we don't want them victimizing any more people. All right, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. We got a lot of stories to get to. I'll read tweets later. Let's go over here. Let's give you one of our own stories. Let's start with con jobs. I forgot to tell you guys to roll the intro. Okay, so we are told over and over by the Trump administration, hey, we got to cut tax for the rich and for giant corporations because it's going to lead to jobs for you guys. So what we are doing at TYT Investigates is figuring out, is that true? Are they taking money from tax cuts and actually creating jobs with it? Well, we've found a lot of evidence about FedEx and UPS. So a new story from Steve Horn at TYT Investigates on this. First, let's give you context about how much money these guys make. So UPS reported $49.6 billion in gross profits for 2016, while FedEx reported $38.3 billion for fiscal year 2017. Both companies also paid out billions more to their investors in the form of dividends and stock buybacks. Now, I'm not telling you that because there's something wrong with them making money. Have at it, Hoss, make as much money as you want. And then if your stockholders do well, great, fantastic. That's not the issue. The issue is sometimes they'll say like, oh golly gee, you know, we're gonna create jobs, but we don't have enough money. That's why we need the tax cuts. If we had the tax cuts, then finally we could make some money and then create more jobs. And that's what they say on TV over and over again. And they send out lackeys to do likewise, which you're gonna see in a second. So in fact, UPS CEO David Abney told the audience at a September 20th event held by the Business Roundtable, a consortium of corporate CEOs, that revamping the US tax system is, quote, about growing the American economy, creating jobs, and giving us all a chance to be competitive. Now, poor guys, I mean, they only made $49.6 billion in gross profits. They can't be competitive without tax cuts. Okay, well, that's fine, okay? What I care about is jobs. Now, if they actually created jobs, then hey, hunky dory, everybody's, you know, the middle class goes up, etc., right? And they make more money, God bless. Now, are they actually going to do that? Now, before I get to the both tragic and hilarious results of their so-called job creation, let me give you one more thing from FedEx. Now, this is going to be Stephen Moore, he's a conservative, and he says that he was at an event with the CEO of FedEx, that's Fred Smith. And apparently Fred Smith also promised great jobs if we cut taxes. Let's watch.
We're up here at a 40% tax rate on our businesses, and the rest of the world's at 20% or less. So we our businesses, when they compete in global markets, are starting with a 20 percentage point disadvantage. That's just un-American. Why don't we go from having one of the worst tax systems in the world to one of the best in terms of attracting businesses, jobs back in the United States? You know, I had dinner, Allison, the other night with Fred Smith, the CEO of FedEx, a company that employs 100,000 Americans. And he just basically said, look, if you get that tax rate down, as Donald Trump is talking about, and you also do the repatriation. Remember, Allison, we want to allow companies to bring money, trillions of dollars that's overseas back invested in the United States.
Yeah.
He said, look, we're going to build new airplanes. We're going to have more vehicles. We're going to hire more workers.
We're going to hire more workers. That's what FedEx said. That's what they're going to do with the money, because otherwise they don't have enough money to hire workers. And now, before we get to the great follow-up to that, Stephen Moore is not telling the truth. He said, we're at 40 and others are at 20. Actually, no, we're not at 40. The top rate for corporations are 35%, but most of them don't pay that. What Stephen Moore doesn't tell you is that the effective corporate tax rate, the tax they actually pay, is 22%. So we're not anywhere near 40. So that lie about, oh, the poor corporations paying 40%, not remotely true. But Allison Camerato is actually pretty great. And she, unlike a lot of other anchors, had an excellent follow-up question. Watch this.
Aren't they going to also automate things
more?
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, is he actually giving a number of how many workers he's going to hire? How many?
Yeah. Well, he said thousands, and that's one company. I mean, Apple CEO Tim Cook has said that they're going to bring $150 billion back to the United States. Some of that will go to dividends to shareholders and pension funds. Some of that money will be used to expand.
Okay. Thousands? That was awesome. All right, great follow-up question there. So now let's show you some of the reality of what we already know. So this is, they say, oh, well, if you give me these future tax cuts, I'll create jobs. Well, okay, well, you guys have had a lot of tax subsidies in the past from the federal government and also from different state governments. So what happened in those cases? Maybe that'll be a guidepost for us. So that's what Steve Horn looked at here. UPS has applied for and been approved for at least $9.025 million in tax benefits from the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, IEDC, since 2012, according to contracts reviewed by TYT. So now Mike Pence used to, of course, be the governor of Indiana. Now he's lieutenant governor, he's the current governor. So how'd that turn out? Well, interesting twist here. However, more than $8.3 million of those benefits has yet to be dispersed, in part because some Indiana state tax assistance programs are contingent on provable job creation. The tax dollars already distributed to UPS by IEDC went not toward job creation, but toward improving, quote, efficiencies within the company. Okay, first of all, a lot of times efficiencies means I fired you and I'm now more efficient. Okay, but put that aside. So they're like, okay, here's $9 million, but you have to show that you create jobs. By the way, here, credit to Indiana, Pence and the new governor, because it did say in there you have to create jobs. And then UPS is like, oh, we were just kidding. We weren't really going to create jobs. So they couldn't get most of the money. They had to, you know, the $8.3 million had to sit there because they didn't actually create jobs. Like, why don't we just take the money and create efficiencies? Isn't that good enough? In this case, not good enough, okay? Because they never use it for that. All right, TYT has learned, Horn continues, that the one time in recent years in which IEDC granted UPS a tax credit contingent on job creation, the company backed away from the deal, okay? So this is another deal. The tax credit was worth $875,000, and they just said, look, in return, you don't have to create thousands of jobs. It was very specific, 207 jobs at a minimum wage of, for Indiana in this case, $11.05. Okay, I don't know that those numbers add up, but it's not bad spending $875,000 if you got 207 jobs. It could be worse, not bad. Okay, so what did UPS do? They never built a hub in Jeffersonville. They were like, nah, really? We actually have to create the jobs? Once again, nope. We got no jobs, so we were just hoping to just get the money. And they didn't get the money. So good job in following up with that with the Indiana government so that they didn't get the money. Okay, now we go to Illinois and FedEx. Illinois Department of Transportation's Economic Development Program gave FedEx a $2 million subsidy toward its Cherry Valley hub in 2008. According to forms it has submitted with the Illinois Department of Transportation, FedEx has created 31 jobs there since receiving the money. Now that one was not contingent, but they went and followed up. And with $2 million, they created 31 jobs. Woo. Okay, now, the other thing they never tell you is, were those 31 jobs actually new jobs, or did they just bring them from another state? Because one of the things that FedEx and UPS, like a lot of other corporations do, is they threaten the local state government. They go, well, look, I've got a center in Memphis, but I could move it to Mississippi. And they play these games to get subsidies and your hard-earned tax dollars. And sometimes they'll take the 31 jobs from Mississippi and move it to Memphis and go, Memphis, nice job on the money that you gave me, right, et cetera. Now, look, this was about Illinois, but there is another. And read the whole story, and we'll have the story for you. The link down in the description box below. Great job by TYT Investigates, which, by the way, you guys built. Thank you for doing that so we could find out stories like this. So this case was in Illinois, but there is one involving Memphis and Mississippi. You read the whole story. Last two things for you guys. We go back to UPS. In 2015, UPS got $1.7 million in tax rebate money from the Kentucky Economic Development Finance Authority for its highly automated Centennial Hub in Louisville. According to the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development, the tax deal aims to create 12 new jobs. Okay, now you lost me. I mean, it's one thing to spend $875,000 and hope to get back a couple of hundred jobs, which didn't happen because they were not telling the truth or never delivered, right? It's another thing to spend $1.75 million and create 12 jobs that might or might not move from a different state. I think that a lot of you will agree with me. This is not the right way to do things. But if you did a poll in Kentucky and you said, all right, we can either give a company $2 million, nearly $2 million, $1.75, and then create 12 jobs, maybe, okay, or we're going to pick 12 random people in Kentucky and just give them $1.75 million. I'm pretty sure I know which way that poll is going to come out. Like, if it's that little jobs, just give them the money. You'd be way better off. The reason I tell you that is that's not the right way to do it. The reason I tell you that is because the point is for these governments to just give the money to the corporations who often donate to the politicians' campaigns anyway. They're just trying to find an excuse. They're like, oh, no, it's okay, it's okay. We created 12 jobs. Okay. Finally, in 2012, the company landed, this is FedEx now, a $14.64 million Tennessee tax abatement, which went toward expanding a FedEx pilot training facility at the Memphis airport. That sounds like it might create jobs, but it didn't. It created zero jobs in the process. 14 some odd million dollars right into their pocket, zero jobs for you. So the next time you see these guys on TV telling you, oh yeah, we don't want the tax cuts for ourselves. No, we want it for you guys so we can create jobs for you. Know that in the past, that has not been their record. They take the money and they pay themselves through stock buybacks, which increases the amount of money that the executives make. Yes, the shareholders do well, but the executives do great with those stock buybacks. And oftentimes, as we have covered in other stories related to this in TYT Investigates, what they'll also do is create efficiencies where they either automate your job or outsource your job. Whatever you do, don't believe the hype just because someone on TV told you that they were doing it for your benefit. Oftentimes, if you look at the facts as we have, that is the opposite of what's the case. Okay, now I'm going to go to a different story on O'Reilly. I'm running out of time. Okay, real quick. So now we've covered the Bill O'Reilly story plenty. So there's a new allegation of another woman that he harassed. That's not the point of this story, okay? Now, it's investment manager Michael Panter joined the hashtag MeToo movement by telling a story about an ex-girlfriend who used to work at Fox News, and O'Reilly sexually harassed her as well, according to his claims about what she said. So that's not the heart of this story, though. The heart of the story is O'Reilly and Fox News management then later turned around and asked that same woman to try to dig up dirt on another victim, someone else that O'Reilly had sexually harassed, but who they wanted to smear. So this story is not about O'Reilly, it's about Fox management, because Panter says that the ex-girlfriend, who apparently signed a non-disclosure agreement, received calls from then Fox News co-president Bill Shine, Fox Human Relations, and O'Reilly. So Fox management, Bill Shine is the new co-president. Roger Ailes is gone. We are cleaning up our house here. Well, Shine was one of his top lieutenants. He's implicated in so many of these stories, including this one. They call and they go, all right, let's go find a way to make sure we can smear the people that O'Reilly sexually harassed. So let me give you the details of what he wrote. And by the way, he's also a former New Jersey representative and a Democrat, just giving you all the details here, okay? O'Reilly explained that a new accuser was suing him for sexual harassment. This latest victim was someone my ex knew and lived in the same complex. He got to the point immediately, give me anything you have on this woman which we can use against her. He asked if anything was known about her sex life. He asked if she used any illegal drugs. He also asked if anything was known about her financial situation and marriage. In essence, the leadership of Fox, including their HR head counsel and O'Reilly, who held my ex's career in their hands and whom O'Reilly was also harassing, was demanding information to attack another victim. That goes to show you how vicious they were. It wasn't just, hey, my word against her. So is there anything related to that sexual harassment case or even sex in general that we could use to show that she wasn't telling the truth? That would be the best case scenario explanation for what Fox News executives did. No, they're like, just tell us anything about her sex life and her finances, and let's see if we can ruin her marriage. If we can dig up dirt about her marriage, maybe we could use that as leverage. So what was the result? Panter said his ex-girlfriend told O'Reilly of an innocuous encounter with the other woman, which prompted the Fox host to get, quote, dismissive and say, quote, none of that is helpful. I'm trying to restrain myself from telling you what O'Reilly actually did with the woman he was then asking for help and smearing someone else. But it was his usual pattern. Let's leave it at that. So these guys have no bounds. Now O'Reilly's gone and his career is pretty much over. Now two different talent agencies have dropped him. But Bill Shine still exists. The guy who helped engineer the cover up of Ailes' sexual harassment cases and O'Reilly's sexual harassment cases. And encouraged, apparently, according to these reports, the smear of the victims, is still in charge at Fox News. It doesn't look like they've changed a thing. Okay, now I got to take a quick break. When we come back, speaking of not changing a thing, the DNC, the Democratic Party, they've decided they're going to strike out against progressives. Of course! But the way that they're going to do that is deeply frustrating. I'll tell you about, unfortunately, yet another dirty trick. All right, back on the Young Turks. First of all, important correction from a story I just did, the last story on O'Reilly and Fox News. So I was frustrated that Bill Shine was continued to be co-president of Fox News after Ailes left, but he actually did leave in May, so he's not there anymore. That is a very important correction. I just wanted to make sure that you guys knew that. All right, now let me go to some tweets here. Joseph S. CNN host actually asked a decent follow-up question for once. Actually, you'd be surprised. Allison Camerato is really pretty good. You should check her out on CNN. She does think things through and asks pretty great follow-up questions.
She used to be on Fox News.
She used to be on Fox News. She left Fox News a while back, then went to CNN. So I know you're thinking like, no, but give her a chance. She's actually pretty good, as I've now said 18 times. Okay, Control Left says, so corporations are using the I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today line now. Pretty much. And Rita Ann says, when are American people going to wake up? Job creators is code for bigger tax breaks for the outsourcers. Well, that is, as we have shown you several times, literally true. And thank you guys for creating that TYT Investigates team. I think they're doing a wonderful job of getting you real news. Okay. Now, let's go over here. So, we've got a lot of really interesting races that are coming up in 2018. Lots of Democrats running, some in Democratic districts with Democratic incumbents, some in Republican districts where there's a lot of different Democrats vying to knock off the Republican in that district. So the Democratic Party should be treating all those candidates equally. Now, you want to take a guess as to whether they're doing that? Not if you're up against an incumbent. Then, well, you know, this progressive candidate, do we really have to be fair to them? I mean, this is our beloved people in power. No, it doesn't matter that they're already in power. The question is, who do the voters want? Not who do the people in power want? So it should be entirely irrelevant that they are incumbents. So how are they going to punish these progressives that are running against Democratic incumbents? Well, there's something very important called VAN, the Voter Access Network. Let me explain what that is. And the Just Democrats put out a press release about this, and I'm going to quote it. Voter Access Network is a tool used by Democratic candidates to target voter outreach efforts. Generally, campaigns are given access to voter data that has been gathered by previous campaigns at both a national and local level. So That's the way that it is supposed to work. So you've got two Democratic candidates, or three or four or five, they're supposed to have the same access to this incredibly important tool for reaching out to voters. Well, that is not how it's working for three of the Justice Democratic candidates who are challenging incumbents. So JD candidate Anthony Clark is going up against Danny Davis, and he has been blocked. I'm going to give you the details of how they were blocked in a second. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with a really powerful challenge of Joe Crowley in New York. Joe Crowley is one of the leadership guys in the Democratic Party, so they really, really want to protect him. And Sarah Smith is going up against Adam Smith in Washington, a Democratic representative that is weirdly conservative in the state of Washington. I don't know why you guys put up with that. So let me go one by one through these different issues. So Anthony Clark is running against the incumbent Danny Davis. In his case, well, that one was really simple. They just blocked access to him. They said, we're not going to give you that information at all. So Anthony Clark now stands a far less chance of winning, thanks to the shenanigans of the DNC as usual. Now, for the others, they had to do some level of nuance. So for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they said, oh, sure, we'll give you the voter data. But they removed key voter data from past campaigns and gave her a watered down version. It's not like these guys are going to be caught unawares. Like, would they think that we're new to this thing? The Just Democrats are stacked with people who worked on Bernie Sanders' campaign. They took Bernie Sanders from almost nothing in the polls, 2-3%, up to 46%. I think they know what they're doing. So when they get the voter data and it's old voter data that is not nearly as useful, that is not a trick that is going to slide past them. And the way that they treat progressives as if we're children and don't know how the politics works is maddening. By the way, if you want to fight back, justicedemocrats.com/win to finance these guys and to help them and support them, because they do not take corporate money and they do not take PAC money. So that is part of what drives the Democratic establishment crazy about these candidates. They're actual progressives that are uncorrupted. So that leads us to Sarah Smith, which unfortunately is the funniest story. I mean, it's not funny at all, because she's an actual progressive who fights super hard to get your priorities. But it's funny in how they denied her. They said, well, sure, you could get access to that important information, but first you need to get approval. You need two county party approvals. You need approval from 10 legislative district parties. This is all the establishment, right? There's some great folks in there, but some folks who are not going to want to see the incumbent lose. And then my favorite part, you need to be endorsed by half of the Democratic Party before you can get access. So 51% of the Democratic Party has to, in the state of Washington, has to agree to give her the voter data. That's like winning the election. Like, okay, no problem. You can get access to the voter data to help you win the election right after you win the election. Okay, now it's not the same exact thing because it's Democratic Party officials, but it is a preposterous standard. Well, the establishment will give you access to their data as soon as the establishment agrees with you. How's that for circular reasoning? So, number one, this is outrageous and we have to do something about it. And I'm going to tell you what you can do about it in a second. But I want to just give you one more quote. It's from Corbin Trent. He is the communication director for Just Democrats. He said, it's baffling to me. Sanders' presidential race added much needed energy to the party. This slate of 29 inspirational Just Democrats could have had a similar impact, or could have a similar impact. But we are being thwarted at every turn. We fully expected that we'd see resistance from multinational corporations and the billionaire class. But it's a shame that we also have to fight our own damn party. Well, as usual, Just Democrats are fighting back. So they've started a petition, justdemocrats.com/DNC. Very simple concept, end the Democratic Party voter file lockout. By the way, this is also happened to Tim Canova when he was running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The DNC supported Debbie Wasserman Schultz unfairly against another Democrat in her race. Wow, couldn't have seen that coming. But look, guys, I know that it's predictable. Unfortunately, it is really important and does prevent these candidates from being able to reach you guys, the actual voters. So if we put enough pressure on, we've got to get the DNC, if they're actual Democrats, to treat Democrats equally and fairly. The Republicans are the ones that are supposed to be doing voter suppression, not the Democrats. So it is absolutely outrageous. Go sign the petition right now, justdemocrats.com/DNC, end the Democratic Party voter file lockout, and demand that the Democratic Party stop blocking Just Democrats from using the voter contact tools that everyone should have access to. So, and if you care to have support these candidates, then go to justdemocrats.com/win. But even if you don't support these candidates, you should support the idea of equal access that is supposed to be the core of the Democratic Party. Okay. All right, one last story. Okay, just to end on a fun note, okay? So Donald Trump's been all over Fox News, a couple other outlets too, including the 700 Club. They're all very, very friendly to him. He almost never goes on a station that isn't friendly to him since he has become president. And boy, Media Matters in this case did a great job, put together a compilation of why Donald Trump goes on those outlets. It might be a little friendly, to say the least. Watch this.
Mr. President, I'm so glad to see you. I'm so proud of everything you're doing.
So, how was your week?
You guys want to start with good news? Yeah. Who wants some good news?
You have accomplished so much in that 9 months.
Tell me, how good is your press secretary?
Who's been your biggest opponent? Has it been Democrats resisting? Has it been fake news media? Has it been deep state leaks?
Deep state that has been leaking on you.
So much fake news. And we have to
agree with that, fake news?
You probably agree with me.
I do. But
your agenda is not getting out because people are caught up on the Comey issue and ridiculous stuff.
I agree.
I've never seen any one person face as much in terms of attacks as you have.
There are thousands and thousands of people praying for you all the time, holding you up.
Overwhelmingly, there's a lot of support for you here. Congress.
The country owes you a great debt on so much, but on that in particular.
Well, that's very interesting. It's well put. It's true.
I opened up the failing New York Times and the Washington Post this morning.
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Are you moving so quickly that your communications department cannot keep up with
yes.
you?
You're also one of the most loved and respected.
I would say that also.
In history.
There was so much effusive praise for your visit to Puerto Rico by the governor, by most of those mayors, who said we've never seen this level of response from the federal government.
You are fighting like hell every day.
When I walked in, the cheering was incredible.
You were a rock star. I saw the video of it.
It was crazy.
You're better than President Bush. I mean, the federal pages are down 30% under your leadership. Well, and
a Republican senator's doing enough to have your back.
Just know that we will forever vote for you.
I have a friend who's a trucker. And he's very proud of his equipment. You have been so great, and I'm very proud of you. The show, which I watch absolutely almost all the time, even if it means TiVo or whatever device you happen to be using at the time.
We appreciate it.
But no, your show is fantastic. Thank you for your support over the years. You've been so fantastic.
You are most welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Proud of what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Appreciate it.
Let's keep this country safe. And I think that's our prayer for you and the country.
All I know is Fox is good.
Yeah. You are fair.
And I have to say, Fox has treated me fairly. And I don't mean good, but they've treated me fairly. I don't want to be treated good. I just want to be treated fairly.
All I want is fair. I don't want anything else. I just want fair. And Fox has really been fair, and I appreciate it.
You are, if I may say, everything is advertised as you ran for president. And appreciate everything you're doing.
Credit to Media Matters there for putting together a nice compilation. Just quickly, my favorite parts. If I may say, you are wonderful, dear sir. Yeah, you probably can say. And Lou, that might be why you got the interview in the first place. But actually, better than that was, I watch you almost all of the time. You know what that means? He never watches. He's not on Fox, Lou Dobbs. He's on Fox Business. Trump doesn't watch that. He's like, I watch you on the TiVo or something. No, you don't. This classic Trump lie. But you know, you kissed my ass, so I'm on here, Lou. Nice job. We owe you a great debt, sir. Then the great line of the deep state has been leaking all over you. Well, that part I enjoyed. Some truth to that one. And finally, your communication department cannot keep up with you, right? You're just too good and too fast. Oh, that's what happened. Yeah, I mean, that's. No, he's an idiot and he tweets in the middle of the night. That's the reason they can't keep up with him is they're like, no, don't tweet that. Oh, for Christ's sake. You are loved and respected, aren't you? Well, I would agree. So the rest of the interviews weren't any better. If they agree with Trump and they want to say nice things about him, I get it. But you should also ask him tough questions. There wasn't a tough question to be found in any of those interviews. Anyway, I don't think you're surprised that those guys, turns out that they wanted to give Trump a fair hearing, and Trump likes people who don't criticize him. Didn't see that coming. All right, we're way out of time. We got to go. When we come back, more amazing news for you guys, including, oh no, George H.W. Bush, what have you done? So apparently, the ex-president is grabbing women's asses and then doing one of the world's worst jokes. Well, I have to be fair and honest, a Uyghur level pun, but you shouldn't be doing that while sexually assaulting women. All right, we'll explain when we come back.